Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III. Joined by, I don't know if he's so extraordinary today, he's starting off mocking me, talking about you got your collar popped. I say, well, you got Vaseline on your lips, so what you gonna do about it? Thank you for tuning in to the program. My name is Abraham Hamilton III. I'm the host of this program, joined, as I just mentioned, by producer extraordinaire, often imitated, never duplicated, the real J Mac, ladies and gentlemen. We had a good time on the road in North Carolina. We'll be back on the road next week in Bourbonnais, Illinois, at the ICHE Conference, Illinois Christian Home Educators. Looking forward to being there as well. We'll broadcast live from there. So we're in Bourbonnais, Illinois, at the Olivet University, Olivet Nazarene University campus. That's where the conference is being hosted. I'm delighted for that opportunity. If you're in the area or willing to come to the area, you would have to register at iche.org, and you will be in the building at this very moment. Many of you, if not most of you, are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to remind you to do it with intentionality. As we discussed earlier this week, I've just been meditating personally on the Apostle Paul's words about having finished his course and kept the faith, and encouraging you to consider, what is your course? You know, life hits us in different ways. We have various stages of life. I'm currently in the stage where I have young children still in my home. But should the Lord tarry, I know there will be a time when I won't have young children in my home. Yet the Lord still will require fruitfulness and faithfulness through me and from me. And the same applies to you just as it applies to me. And my prayer is that I will be faithful continuously. But in order for the Apostle Paul to be able to say he finished his course, he had to have clarity as to what his course was. If you're in a life stage, and this happens to us at different stages, to where life has hit you in a peculiar way, and it kind of, you're kind of stunned. You know, I remember the old Nintendo boxing game, Mike Tyson's punch out. You know, you hit Glass Joe the right way, he dazed up for a moment, you know. The old school cartoons would have the birds circling, the Tweety birds and everything circling when you're dazed up. There's no error or sin or anything wrong in being dazed up, being mystified temporarily. But the question is, what do we do thereafter? You know, some things occur in life that we didn't anticipate. And I'm telling you, I'm right there with you, navigating things that transpire, calling my attention away at various points. I don't think I haven't noticed the necessity of having fill-in hosts for me from time to time. That's because life has hit me as well. You know, and at the appropriate time, maybe I'll get into that a little bit more. But that's real, man. But none of those things are sufficient justification for us to not have clarity concerning what our course is, and a commitment and a resolve to finish our course and to finish our courses well. So as you are making your transition from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, understand the primacy that God places on family. Understand that what goes on in your house is far more important than what goes on in the White House. And understand that God desires for what we do, what flows through us externally, he desires, God that is, desires that to be the result of what overflows in our personal relationship with the Lord. That is available to us, man. That is available to us. So as you are making your transition, do so with intentionality. Don't allow life to just happen to you. You know, I know Dave Ramsey has the expression concerning finances: if you don't tell your money where to go, you'll be wondering where it went. You know, that's true. That's true. If you don't have a plan, you'll wake up one day and, man, what happened? I didn't realize all of this transpired. Well, it's even true in a more expanded context concerning life. If we're not intentional and directing our lives in a particular manner, we'll be wondering, man, where has the time gone? Then you wake up, 5 years have passed, 10 years have passed, 20 years have passed. You know, you remember you were 25, now you're 36. And it's like, huh, wow, that happened quicker than I expected. Yeah, it does. It does. It's not going to wait for you. I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith. I have finished my course. What is your course? To the Word of God we go. John chapter 1. John chapter 1 is where we're going to begin the program today. John chapter 1, verse 14. Critical, critical, critical revelation is provided for us there. The Apostle John is writing, and he records this. And the Word, notice in the text, Word is capitalized. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we saw his glory, also capitalized. Glory as of the only begotten from the Father, also capitalized, full of grace and truth. Full of grace and truth. We live in a society that loves to talk about the grace of God. You might even have a booming preacher voice, the grace of God, you know. While simultaneously dealing in the time, people ain't too interested in truth. None of that truth stuff. Concerning Messiah, the scripture records that he was full of grace and truth. You cannot have one without the other. The world likes to talk about God is a God of love. He's a God of love. He's a loving God. He is a loving God. And truth is one of the things that aids us in coming to grasp with exactly how loving he is. There is no such thing as an appropriate gospel presentation that excludes truth from the conversation. There's no such thing as an appropriate gospel presentation that excludes repentance from the conversation. Faith, yes, is vitally important. We are saved by grace through faith. But if faith is discussed and grace is discussed, but repentance is excluded, you have not received the gospel presentation. I've long said the gospel is the gospel in Sudan just as much as it is in China, in Iran, in Iraq, in America, in North Korea and South Korea. The gospel is the same in every country. If you have to adjust what is presented based on your locale, you're not talking gospel. You're not talking soteriology. Full of grace and truth. We've described before, and the Word became flesh. God the Son is described in John's recording of the gospel as the Logos of God, the Word capitalized. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. This is a description of the Logos of God's incarnation. And we saw his glory, full of grace and truth. We absolutely, 100%, indisputably require, we need God's grace. But without truth, mankind is deprived of the wherewithal of appropriately esteeming the grace of God. which results in lives that bear that out. I've explained before the heresy of antinomianism, how the Apostle Jude said, or wrote, I should say, that I wanted to write you to address our common salvation, but because false brethren had crept in unawares, what was the main commitment, main thrust of these false brethren? That they perverted or twisted God's grace. How did they twist it? They twisted God's grace into lasciviousness. They twisted God's grace into a license for all manner of wickedness. Lasciviousness and licentiousness is a particular application of wickedness in a sexually immoral display or engagement. God's grace was twisted into sexual rebellion. Kind of like what Delman Coates is spouting. Don't think I've forgotten about him. I haven't. I just have to give appropriate treatment to that diabolical, I can't call that a sermon, diabolical, sin-espousing, endorsing, and advocating presentation. That if you embrace that notion unrepentantly, you're in peril of eternal damnation. Similarly, truth requires grace. God doesn't want us overwhelming people, bludgeoning them with truth void of his grace. I remember when I was younger, and I've talked about this in the past. I'll just say it this way. I've matured a bit in my delivery. I'll just say it that way. Truth requires grace. But the interaction between grace and truth culminates in what Jesus exemplified with the woman who was caught in adultery. Woman, where are your accusers? Neither do I accuse you. Go your way. Go your way. Jesus never contested what was presented in terms of her sin required judgment. Jesus never said your sin no longer requires judgment. And that judgment in that instance was a mortal condemnation. The townspeople had picked up stones. That judgment was a right judgment. But Jesus interceded on the woman's behalf and simply said, let you, who is without sin, meaning let you, who also is void of the necessity of having your sin judged, many of you engaging and have engaged in sin that requires mortal condemnation as well, let you, who is without sin, cast the first stone. In other words, you guys have made your judgment. You have made your assessment, right? Let you, who has the right internal composition, being guiltless concerning the very same tone and tenor that you seek to apply to this woman, you are the only one who has the lawful authority to enforce the penalty that you've assessed. Let you, who are without sin, you cast the first stone. To which the scripture records, stones start hitting the ground and they all walked away. To which Jesus responds, woman, where are your accusers? Neither do I accuse you. Go your way and sin no more. The interaction between grace and truth doesn't result in an abuse of grace that perpetuates the rebellion. The interaction between grace and truth results in a gratitude in the heart of the one who has been benefited by grace to live in truth that now responds accordingly to being a recipient of God's grace. Paul said, should sin abound because grace abounds? God forbid. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw his glory, full of grace and truth.
1 Million Moms has received complaints about an Arm & Hammer laundry commercial where Meghan Trainor deliberately insinuates profanity. Instead of a wholesome commercial, Arm & Hammer deliberately chose to produce something controversial. 1 Million Moms finds this highly inappropriate. Arm & Hammer should have the corporate responsibility not to offend families. Arm & Hammer needs to know that parents disapprove. Take action at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I'm going to try to get to some things today that, you know, I just ran out of time to address during the week. There's always so much going on. I always have far more show than I have time on the air. But I want to start with Elon Musk's announcement yesterday concerning his departure as a special government employee. Many of you may recall I described that was Elon Musk's formal status to serve as the head of Doge, and he did so in a volunteering capacity, and that you can only function in that capacity for so long before either becoming a paid employee or resigning from the position. In his announcement, Elon Musk said, quote, "As my scheduled time as a special government employee comes to an end, I would like to thank President Donald Trump," he posted this on X, by the way, "for the opportunity to reduce wasteful spending. The Doge mission will only strengthen over time as it becomes a way of life throughout the government," end quote. And I said to you guys before, Elon Musk is no fool. So he put people in place long before now to continue the mission of Doge after his departure, because he could only serve in that capacity for the amount of time that he has been there. And the objective from the very beginning is for Doge to wrap up its work, I believe, in 2 years was the original objective. I raise this because over the previous weekend, you know, Elon Musk was on the Sunday shows, and he had some interesting things to say. This comes at a particularly interesting time, because you have the legislation that was passed out of the House of Representatives, the A Big Beautiful Bill Act. Every time I say that, I chuckle. That's literally the name of the bill. You know, and it just, man, it seems when Democrats name bills, they always name them, you know, the Equality Act, you know, the Respect for Marriage Act. They always have these wonderful sounding names, but then Republicans come up with a Big Beautiful Bill Act. You know, like, what is, we can't do anything better than that. You know, there's no better title for it other than that. And I expressed during the show I did from North Carolina, my conflict over the measure, because I understand the landscape as it is, very extremely narrow Republican majority in the House of Representatives, a little bit more breathing room in the Senate, but you also have the filibuster. So this is a measure that is being presented via the reconciliation process. So you have limits as to what you can do via reconciliation, and I'm sensitive to that. But what happened to the Republican disdain for omnibus bills? You know? So how do we navigate that? How do we balance that? I believe Speaker Johnson has done what he believes is best in the circumstances, in getting the bill through the House of Representatives. The Senate is considering it now. Several Republican senators, frankly, have come out expressing their concern about the legislation. Of course, the Democrat senators don't want it to pass, you know, or let me say it this way. They won't publicly come out and endorse it. But you have a lot of Democrat spending priorities that are in the bill. There's some things in the bill that I like, good things. There's some other things that I do not like. I mean, for example, with the massive debt we're in nationally, we're going to hike the debt limit, another $4 trillion. That's what we're going to do. And the spending cuts, where are they? Where are they? You know? We have some, no doubt about it, but are they sufficient in light of what we're facing with, you know, Social Security? I'll just say it like this. Being at a stage in a station that is suboptimal, you know. It's very interesting. But Elon Musk, he's going out, but he ain't going out quietly. On the CBS show, he was asked about the Big Beautiful Bill, and, you know, he questioned. Or should I say he posited a bill can be either big or beautiful. It can't be both. Kind of sound like what I said from North Carolina. Listen to and watch clip number two. Clip two. Go.
So, you know, I was like disappointed to see the massive spending bill, frankly, which increases the budget deficit, not just decrease it, and undermines the work that the Doge team is doing.
I actually thought that when this big, beautiful bill came along, I mean, like, everything he's done on Doge gets wiped out in the first year.
I think a bill can be big or it can be beautiful, but I don't know if it can be both. My personal opinion.
Now, I don't think this is a risky thing to say. Elon Musk helped President Trump win the White House. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. From campaigning for him to having creating a political action committee for funding, no doubt about it. Doge's whole thrust was to cut governmental, wasteful, fraudulent, and unlawful spending with the specific objective to reduce the deficit. This bill does the exact opposite. And so it's one of those things, man, that, man, I feel people's pain when they express perpetual frustration. Because it's like, wait a minute, man. No, all the stuff we did, all the campaigning, all of the zeal and the energy surrounding Doge, I mean, learning about the millions of people receiving federal funds and they're over 120 years of age. And it's like, so in one fell swoop, we're going to just trash all of that? But, Abe, you got to deal with the world as it is and not how you want it to be. I get that, man. But why is it? I heard Representative Ro Khanna on TV talking about what all the Democrat Party has done. Why is it so often Democrats set objectives and they accomplish them? I mean, you're going to have the creation of the on-ramp to a single-payer health insurance system in America called Obamacare. They passed that. They get that passed. But whenever it comes to major structural institutional changes that need to happen in the conservative direction, it's always, you know, move very small, move very lightly. You know, I've long said that the overwhelming spending crisis in Washington, D.C. has been a bipartisan project. It's been a bipartisan project. And you see things like this, man, things like this, it puts a wet blanket on your excitement that we finally are moving in the direction. We're learning about, you know, insane things that are happening with the government dime. And then the very next thing, we got a big, beautiful bill that's just going to $4 trillion to the deficit, you know. Doge who let the Doge out? Now, that being said, is reconciliation the proper measure, considering, you know, the Byrd rule in the U.S. Senate? Is that the proper measure to, for example, codify the proposed cuts via from Doge? I understand that argument. I'm sensitive to that argument. All right. But it feels like, and I know feelings, y'all, I'm the guy who always says feelings are horrible generals, but tremendous foot soldiers. But feelings are something we have to navigate as people, and feelings probably isn't the best description. The perception is, I'll just speak for myself. Yeah, Abe, I know you want to see government rein in spending. You want to see, you know, D.C. operate the way that every American family has to operate in terms of functioning within the budgetary constraints What an idea, having a balanced budget. I mean, you know, you want all of those things. But, you know, you just wait. You just wait. We'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. And I'm just like, are y'all understanding? What I'm understanding, you do realize President Trump is out in 2026, right? Not automatic. I know his term expires in 2028, but in 2026 is when you have the midterm elections. And midterm campaigning for 2026 is about to start. It's about to start. Once we turn the corner, hit the fall of 2025, you're going to have senators beginning to ramp up their campaigns for the incumbents. You're going to have vying for the open Senate seats. There have been a slew, several. I say a slew. There have been several Democrat senators who've announced that they are not seeking re-election, so those will be open seats. You'll have the congressional elections in the House of Representatives in the midterm. Congress is not going to be focused on passing bills. Many of them are going to be campaigning. And then you're going to have, just like you have now, the deep state adjutants using lawfare. And then you're going to have, with the imminence and the pressing of the reelection and the election concerns, they're going to try to run out the clock on President Trump. I hope and I pray, and even like the conversations about, you know, Trump 2028, I think that's foolish. We know what the Constitution says. That meant constitutionalists are supposed to be the ones who adhere to what the Constitution says. So if you're trying to make the statement that in 2028 we need to continue America First policies that President Trump was made popular for and was elected for as he campaigned on them, say that. Why not say America First 2028? Why not say America First 2024, America First 2028, and America First always? Why not say that? I think some are trying to hitch their wagon to President Trump's personality. You know, but I think the GOP is going to have a rude awakening coming soon, because I think they have conflated President Trump's popularity with the Republican Party's popularity. And let me just tell you bluntly, they ain't the same, Chief. You had people voting for President Trump. They weren't voting for the Republican Party. And you have those who did vote for President Trump that they are working to change what it means popularly to be a Republican. So I'm just. He dropped that bomb. Elon Musk, I'm talking about now, with his disappointment concerning the spending bill. I mean, the Big Beautiful Bill Act. And he says the bill can be either big or it can be beautiful. I'm not so sure it can be both. I got to tell you, I disagree with Elon Musk on a lot of things, but I agree with him there. Like, you saw him in that clip with his Occupy Mars shirt on. he want to occupy Mars. This old boy want to put a robot in everybody's home. I'm not endorsing y'all to go see it, but I saw the movie iRobot. And if you look closely, the iRobot robots look a lot like the Tesla robots. Am I lying, Jeff? They look a lot like the Tesla robots. You know, the NS5. The robots was trying to take Will Smith's character out. You're having a car accident. I mean, I ain't in a car crash. They're like, no, you're about to be in a car accident. Nah, I haven't seen enough of those. You know. This is the same man. You know, he's a transhumanist. I told y'all before. I appreciate what he's doing. You know, I appreciate his stance on what he describes as the woke mind virus. You know, I recognize that he has, you know, been awakened by what has happened in his own life, having his own son, as he said, stripped from him because of the insanity of transgenderism. But this is also the dude talking about we need more babies. He ain't talking about we need more families, husbands and wives. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of things I disagree with him about. But on this one, I don't know if you can have a bill, the bill can be big or it can be beautiful. I'm not so sure it can be both. I'm not so sure. So again, the tension, the world as you would like it to be or the world as it is, that's the tension, no doubt about it. Do we have equivalent resolve in Congress currently to immediately seek to codify the DOGE cuts? I mentioned several Republican senators objecting to the Big Beautiful Bill Act as it currently stands. You know, Senator Rick Scott, he indicated the need to apply line-by-line cuts to spending in this legislation. He said, quote, you've got to go through every line. Senator Rick Scott from Florida, I'm saying. He said, quote, you've got to go through every line. You're not going to do enough if you just focus on the Green New Deal and you focus on making sure Medicaid goes back to its original purpose. The Green New Deal? That's not enough. I played Senator Ron Johnson's comments for you from North Carolina. I'll go next to Senator Mike Lee. He said, he posted this on X. Quote, raise your hand. I should have said artist formerly known as Twitter. That's what I call it. That's longer to say than X, but I don't like calling it X. I know he's trying to have consistency in branding, SpaceX, X. It's social media, man. You ain't going to Mars via social media. But Senator Mike Lee said on the artist formerly known as Twitter, quote, raise your hand if you want Congress to codify the DOGE cuts, end quote. Senator Rand Paul. Senator Rand Paul said, quote, Congress can't cut spending through DOGE without the president sending a formal rescission bill. That's the law. It only takes a simple majority to pass. But so far, no bill has been sent. In this case, Congress is waiting on the White House, end quote. Representative Keith Self from Texas in the House of Representatives said this, quote, I haven't heard anything about DOGE. And as far as I know, we're not codifying DOGE's findings as fast as we should, end quote. Now, that being said, there's a reality that reconciliation may not be the vehicle to implement DOGE's cuts. Speaker Mike Johnson said the very same thing following a statement by White House advisor Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller said, quote, DOGE cuts are to discretionary spending, e.g. the federal bureaucracy. Under Senate budget rules, you cannot cut discretionary spending in a reconciliation bill, end quote. You can only cut mandatory spending. I understand that argument. More when we come back from this break.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. One more drama playing out. Is the sky falling? Are we going into recession? Are you going to lose all of your 401k? Are you going to lose your job? Are you going to be able to afford groceries?
People better be training their kids, getting back into church, Sunday school, reading the Bible. That revolution will save this country.
We've had a political revolution. Now we need a spiritual revolution.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Listen on the podcast page at AFR.net.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. We're talking about the big, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Bill Act so far. And before we went to the break, I was explaining that I understand the reconciliation process and the Senate's bird rule that makes it difficult for the Senate for the Senate to make changes to a legislation through the reconciliation process that are not primarily budgetary in nature. All right. I understand that. DOGE cuts are what would be directed toward discretionary spending. And it's funny that one of the strange quirks in the Senate's process is that increases in discretionary spending have not been scored as mandatory spending in the past, since it didn't include appropriations committees. So basically, they just sidestepped appropriations committees. And so it's because the appropriations committees are not involved. Voila! Discretionary. The Economic Policy Innovation Center explains, quote, unspent discretionary funds could be rescinded in theory, but this would have to involve the appropriations committees receiving spending instructions, which has not happened since fiscal year 1982, before the Senate's Byrd rule was instituted. I'll add, I guess I'll just say it this way. I should have looked this up. But was it Obamacare passed through reconciliation? Was that passed through the reconciliation process? I may need to look that up. But I'm just saying, it just seems like the things that would be constitutionally aligned, you always have to kick down the street, kick the can further down the street. And I don't know, there are regressive people that would want far more regressive policies implemented as well. But I just feel like on big things that need to happen, regressives seem to implement them more consistently than constitutionalist efforts. The only exception I could say is when you have Republicans advocating for legislation that cuts tax rates. Albeit sometimes they sunset. Jeff, do you recall there being a sunset provision on Obamacare? Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no sunset provision in Obamacare. You know what I mean by sunset? Meaning that, well, we'll implement this policy, but after X amount of years, it automatically goes away. Nah, there's no sunset provision. In fact, Obamacare is still in effect currently, with this exception, that the penalty for not having health insurance has been zeroed out. But the law is still in place. So all that would need to happen for the Obamacare horrors to come right back to us, specifically requiring every American citizen to have insurance or else, is that you amend the existing law to raise the penalty. And that, it's a wonder. Obamacare, if it's passed the reconciliation, it has no sunset. But the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from 2017, it has a sunset. Huh, funny how that tends to happen. Just, man. Something else that happened this week that I wanted to bring to your attention that I didn't have the opportunity to get to. I have to tell you, and I have to be honest, when I'm right, I'm right. When I'm wrong, I'm going to admit that I'm wrong. And I won't say I was wrong completely, because this is just the truth. I didn't say that I completely objected to his position here, but I just wasn't so sure about him. And I'm talking about Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. But I have to say, Marco Rubio has been doing an amazing job as Secretary of State so far. I mean, the things he's putting out policy position papers on Substack and what he's doing. He came into his position, man. Listen, we ain't playing. We ain't playing. We going in. And it's obvious the way that he's doing his job. I have to say, so far, Marco Rubio has been doing a tremendous job as the United States Secretary of State. Something that may seem small, but I would argue that it is substantive, is that Marco Rubio, as Secretary of State, has shut down the Office of Palestinian Affairs and has consolidated its operation into the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Let me explain a bit of what it is. The Office of Palestinian Affairs, the OPA, I'll refer to it here on out as the OPA, the OPA operated as a quasi-independent diplomatic mission to the Palestinian Authority. The head of the OPA did not report to the U.S. ambassador in Jerusalem. No. The head of the OPA sidestepped the U.S. ambassador in Jerusalem and made his report directly to the State Department. So what that resulted in, I'm telling you, it's amazing. And I know some of you might have known this, some of you may not have known this, but what that resulted in is a two tracks, if you will, of diplomacy in Israel. One tract toward Israel, an entirely separate tract for the self-described Palestinian Authority. That wouldn't be confusing at all, would it? The U.S. ambassador is stationed in Jerusalem. Its presence at the heart of Jerusalem. You then had the OPA with a separate diplomatic track that had its report separate from the U.S. embassy. So whenever you're communicating something into the Middle East, into Israel in particular, you would have two separate means of communication. I mean, not to mention we have the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995, which recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's capital and directs that the U.S. embassy be located there, you know. You had that. Well, this isn't the first time the Trump administration has ordered the closure of the OPA, because when Trump was president previously, the OPA was closed in 2019 for precisely the exact same reasons. But see, what happened was Mrs. Joseph Robinette became the Oval Office occupant. He reopened the OPA, resurrecting the two-tracked approach of diplomatic engagement in Israel, entirely separate from the U.S. ambassador to Israel. And so, President Trump, once again, this time through Marco Rubio as the Secretary of State, has shut down the Office of Palestinian Affairs. Now, it's just interesting to me because people, you know, you're not surprised, but people are screaming bloody murder over this. The usual suspects, the people that always scream bloody murder over anything that is right or true or sane or constitutional. It's the same people. You have this consistent effort to try to, you know, treat different people with different convictions and commitments as if they're the same guys. Just say it plainly, you know, we had Mother's Day not too long ago. Mothers at Hamas moms ain't looking for the same thing that other people in the civilized world are looking for. You know, you have these moms that cheer if their children die to advanced terrorism. It's not the same. And you had the gruesome murder of Yaron Lischinsky and Sarah Milgram outside of the Capitol Jewish Museum just last week. Now, both of them worked in the Israel's embassy to the United States. The couple that were planning to be married the very next week, which would have been this week, they were planning to go to Israel, where Yaron Lischinsky was going to propose to Sarah Milgram. From what I understand, Yaron Lischinsky was a Messianic Jew. I mean, he was a believer in Yeshua's Messiah, Yeshua the Messiah. But you have you have to call it alleged because it hasn't been a trial yet, but you have the murder that takes place right outside of the Capitol Jewish Museum, and you have, you know, the shooter removing all doubt as to his motivation. Listen to and watch clip number one. Clip one. Go.
Yaron Lischinsky and Sarah Milgram had just left an event for young Jewish professionals at the Capitol Jewish Museum. They emerged onto the street, where a gunman was waiting.
A guy came up and looked like a gun. I couldn't tell what it was. Shot this young couple.
After the execution in the street, witnesses say the shooter walked into the event at the museum and bragged about what he'd done.
He reaches into his backpack and pulls out a keffiyeh and says, "I did it. I did this for Gaza. Free Palestine."
Free Palestine!
He was still chanting as police took him away.
People ain't the same, man. Chanting as police take him away. According to reports, he traveled from Chicago to come to commit this act of terrorism and murder. Or I should say this murderous act of terrorism. I know people want to be skittish about that. You know, the federal definition for a terroristic act is an act of violence in order to perpetuate a political objective. He's yelling free, free Palestine. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to close the Office of Palestinian Affairs. Yeah, it's a good idea. We don't need two tracks of diplomacy in Israel. We don't need two tracks of diplomacy in Israel. And you know, the thing that, and I haven't seen this reported very much, and it's possible that maybe I just haven't seen it, but it is being reported. Do you realize that a part of the reason for the gathering at the Capitol Jewish Museum, that Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram were gathered to participate in, they were strategizing and discussing ways of getting humanitarian aid to Gazans. You know, and again, as maybe people are reporting this, and I just haven't seen it, but that's the event that they were attending. So Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram were there planning, strategizing, attempting to discuss resources to get humanitarian aid to Gazans. And upon exiting that event is when they were murdered. You can't make this stuff up, man. You cannot make this stuff up. It's exceedingly sad to me that you continue to have, in the face of evident factual information, efforts to try to make moral equivalence in circumstances like this, which brings you right back to where we started the program. In order to be a people that is gracious, to where the grace of God permeates our engagement, we must have truth. It is not loving to sidestep truth in an effort to pacify people. We gotta have truth. It's the reality of the truth that moves one to be able to fully appreciate and embrace grace. We beheld him, Jesus, Yeshua, the anointed one, Messiah, full of grace and truth. We must be a people full of grace and truth. And something I've learned has been an effective tool in evangelism is that when you're dealing with people, that you present the law to the proud and present grace to the humble. Presenting the law to the proud and grace to the humble. I pray you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Lord willing, we'll be back Monday live on the program. And then we'll be on the road later that week, broadcasting live from Bourbonnais, Illinois at the ICHE conference. You all have a wonderful weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.